Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington, working on this program very much. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Monday, January 17, 2022. Two people were killed in a weekend explosion in northern Bahr el Ghazal state.
There was an explosion in the party which claimed the two lives and that nine people injured.
And a faction of the SPLM-IO, loyal to General Simon Gatwich, signs an agreement with President Salva Kiir.
What is important is the implementation of the security arrangements. We need to make sure that after the implementation of the security arrangements period of 3 months, I need to be in Juba.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A breakaway faction of the SPLM in opposition, known as the Kidgwan Group, signed a military agreement with the SPLM in government in the Sudanese capital Khartoum on Sunday. Under the deal, the two parties agreed to observe an immediate ceasefire. The two parties also agreed to carry out reintegration of Kidgwan forces into the South Sudan People's Defense Force after a training period. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
In the agreement, the SPLM in the government and the SPLM-IO Kidgwan faction recommitted themselves to the ceasefire under the Khartoum Declaration Agreement of June 2018. The parties also agreed to work to implement the transitional security arrangements and the voluntary repatriation, resettlement, rehabilitation, and reintegration of returnees and internally displaced persons. The parties also agreed that a joint security committee will be formed immediately and it would determine how long it takes to implement its mandate, which should take not more than 3 months. In addition, the agreement says the SPLM IG will set up a coordination office in Juba, Malakal, and Bor towns to help in assembling and reintegrating the troops from the two sides. The Kidgwan faction broke away from the SPLM-IO last year over disputes about the leadership of Vice President Riek Machar. The leader of Kidgwan Group, Simon Gatwich Dwal, signed the agreement on behalf of the SPLM-IO. At the signing ceremony yesterday in Khartoum, he said his group agreed to the deal to maintain the status of their forces who have been on a war footing for so long.
What is important is the implementation of the security arrangements. We need to make sure that after the implementation of the security arrangements period of 3 months, I need to be in Juba. We have not discussed anything about power sharing at the moment because we want to see the commitment of the government to the security arrangements.
Tut Gatluak Manime, President Salva Kiir's security advisor, who signed the agreement on behalf of the government, reaffirmed the government's commitment to ensure security and stability in the country.
We are ready to offer all the support that would lead to improving the security and stability of South Sudan. When our country is stable, our neighbor Sudan will also be stable. The two countries are socially connected. By signing this agreement today, it marks the end of war in South Sudan.
Shamsuddin Kabashi, a member of the Sudan Sovereign Council, represented the Sudanese government at the signing ceremony. He congratulated the two sides for reaching the deal.
Fighting and even war are just means of expressing certain issues, but the use of force has never been the solution. People need to sit down and hear each other. Whoever was killed from the opposition or the government are South Sudanese citizens. At the end of the day, both sides are losing.
However, Lampol Gabriel, the military spokesperson of the main SPLM-IO faction under Machar, sees the agreement as a clear violation of the River Talais peace agreement signed in 2018. Speaking to this program via phone from Juba, Paul condemned the unilateral decision of the SPLM-IG to sign agreements instead of working as a team with other members of the government in the transitional period.
If they really wanted to dialogue, we should have been there as the SPLM-IO, a party to the agreement, so that our intent and also our size is at. That is one. Two, this is Archie Bonus. It's not SPLM. So if we are now RP-GONU and it is SLM that is going to negotiate, we call this a tactic to use, you know, the Kigwam faction as allies.
Paul says the agreement has no meaning because the two parties have never been in confrontation with each other. The South Sudan government delegation also signed an agreement with Aguelek Force leader General Johnson Oloing to resolve land conflicts between the Cholo and other communities in Upper Nile State. The two parties agreed that the boundaries of Cholo land should be restored to where they stood on 1st of January 1956 maps and as provided for in the River Talais Peace Agreement. The agreement says Cholo and Dinka Apadan communities in Upper Nile and Rueng should engage in peaceful dialogue to find amicable solution to land matters as well as to promote peaceful coexistence. In addition, state authorities should facilitate the return of homes and shops illegally occupied in Melekal and other towns in Upper Nile State to their rightful owners. The parties agreed that the Aguelek forces will promptly integrate into the SSPDF. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Authorities in northern Bahr el-Ghazal state say they are searching for suspects after an explosion at a party killed at least two people and injured dozens of others in Awil West County. The police spokesperson in northern Bahr el-Ghazal state says the injured include three police officers and children aged between 11 and 16. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Captain Guot Guota called the Northern Bahr el-Ghazal State Police spokesperson, says hundreds of young people had organized a party to celebrate a football victory in Mariam Payam of Awil West County on Saturday.
There was an explosion in the party, which claimed the two lives and that nine people injured. But the investigation committee has been formed to develop what happened to find what exactly happened. Until the investigation committee will come out with the accurate information, we will still just confirm the explosion happened in the morning of 15th around 5 a.m.
A call says three police officers were critically injured. The injured include 16 children aged between 11 and 16. He says police are investigating the blast and searching for suspects, including a soldier from the South Sudan People's Defense Forces or SSPDF Wounded Heroes Unit. There are other reports it was caused by a grenade, but Akol says there are other possibilities.
According to information, they say that it is a wounded hero, a wounded soldier, that is being suspected by the victims that is the one behind it. But still, the authorities there and the team that went has it that it is just like an exploitation of two generators that exploded, that there is no any lead indication that it is a hand grenade. So these two conflicting information, we cannot ignore it anyway. We will bring in that suspect for investigation. It is the court now to decide what to do with it.
Akol says preliminary police findings indicate that the chief suspects was chased from the party after causing problems in the crowd. The soldier then allegedly went home and came back with two hand grenades and exploded one in the crowd. He says those injured are now receiving treatment at Awil Civil Hospital. William Anyuan, the Northern Bahr el-Ghazal State Information Minister and chair of a committee investigating the incident, says two people, a soldier and a police officer, have been detained.
But the government is seriously investigating the issue. Some of such suspects are arrested, we are now still investigating the case. We urge our people to be vigilant. You know, this issue of grenade explosion has not been here in our state, and if some elements have that behavior within the community, we will find them out. We will eliminate them out, and we will get a solution to it. We know very well that this grenade is a dangerous weapon that could not be within the community. It should be with combat. So we are urging our people that the government is taking care of this, and it is now, we put it into our attention that we did know that there are some ailment of the people within the community that are this behavior. So we are urging our people to remain calm, and we will take care of this so that it will not repeat itself.
There have been other grenade explosions across South Sudan in recent years. A 13-year-old boy was killed and his two sisters injured after a grenade explosion in Nyamlil area of Wilwes County of northern Bahr El Ghazal state in February last year. Their father, an SSPDF officer, reportedly had left the grenade in a bag and the children mistook it for a toy. And in March, two people died after a man threw a grenade into a bus parking area in Rumbek town of Lakes State. According to the United Nations Mine Action Service, more than 5,000 South Sudanese, including 249 children, have been killed or injured by landmines and exploded ordnance since 2004. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaiding in Bor.
Education officials in Twitch County of Warrap State say thousands of children missed school for three straight months due to flooding that destroyed classrooms and made roads impassable. James Machar, a teacher at Dr. James Yai Secondary School, says students living with disabilities were the most affected and some have dropped out of school. Sheila Pony reports from Twitch County.
Maiwitha Ngok, the director for education in Twitch County, says the floods affected dozens of schools in five payams across Twitch County.
We have 64 primary schools in Twitch County affected by the flood this year. Within these 64 primary schools are in Port Payams, Akoj Payams, Paninyok Payam, Turale Payams, Urok Payams, and Aweng Payams. Payams in Twitch County being affected by the flood. So out of 64 primary schools with a total number of learners is 6,730 learners.
Angok says 2,586 of the students who missed school for three straight months are girls. The county director says the flood started in August and stretched for more than 3 months, confining many primary school pupils in their homes. He says some schools located on lower ground were advised to relocate to higher ground. He says school administrators and teachers advise parents to keep young children at home to avoid the risk of drowning as they winded through the water.
Most of the schools are closed by the flood, and we tried our best to report all those schools being affected to the state headquarters and also to the education partners who are working with education in order to look into the how we can rescue those schools being affected by the flood. We have already formed our community that if the school is flooded and the area is surrounded by the water and there is no way on how you can send those, especially the kids, those around 12 years, 9 years and 7 years, if they are in primary one, then we have to see if there is a highland where we can relocate it.
Charles Magai, a student at St. Augustine Secondary School in Turale, is among those out of school for 3 months.
When you woke up in the morning, going to the school, we fell down in the water. All our books are destroyed and the other things. So, and it is a very big spring. It is going down drying. So it remains, we cross pole. And the other ones, it is very large. It goes until the school compound. You know, other classes were flooded. So even it was very difficult for us to sit in the class and for the teachers to come and teach us. So it was a great effect, actually. So there were some other small students that cannot be able to pass through the deep swamps.
Cecilia Nyibol, a student at Dr. Justin Yach, a school in Turale, described how she struggled to get to school.
During flood, I came late to school. The teachers, some, they did not come. It is because of flood even. Because we missed some lesson during class time. Like now, mathematics supposed to be teach in the morning hours, around 9 or 8, and I came at 9. So that is the effect of the flood. It is too bad. It too harsh. Also, we miss some lesson.
James Machar, a teacher at Dr. Justin Yach Secondary School, says the flooding forced students with physical disabilities to drop out of school.
Some of them are using what you call the wheelchair, but if the place is covered like that, then they're coming to the school is difficult. The same thing also, for those who just are lame, they cannot be able to come to school. Any other physical disabled student, they cannot be able to come to school. Like here, we were having almost 7 disabled students. But here, you can only see one in Form 4. You can only see one in Form 4. But the reason that led that student to be here, it is because it is residing here in the town. But for those who used to come to school with support of others, they cannot able. Yeah, like 3 to 4 of them now have dropped out. Even now, we don't have any information whether they will come or not.
Angok says the prolonged absence from school could have long-lasting effects on the children.
If the child stay out of the school for 1 month, 2 months, then when the child go back to the school again, it will be very difficult for that child to pass the exam. If child stay out of the school for 1 month, maybe in other way around, child will not have an interest of learning again. And if the child is not having an interest of learning, then definitely that child will get nothing in the school when he or she go back to the school. Maybe if she is a lady, automatically she will miss the school and she will get pregnancy.
Last October, the Ministry of Education assessed the situation in Twitch County. Angok says he hopes that assessment will help improve the situation for students in the county. For VOA News, I am Sheila Oponi in Twitch, Warab State.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Cameroonian authorities are asking fans of the African Cup of Nations to get vaccinated. Find out why after this break.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Cameroon launched a massive campaign Sunday to test and vaccinate fans wanting to attend the African Football Cup of Nations for COVID-19. Cameroon and football officials say only 2,000 supporters turned out for matches at stadiums sitting between 20,000 to 60,000 people because of coronavirus restrictions and separatist threats. Muki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé.
This is the deafening noise of vuvuzelas from thousands of football fans outside Yaoundé's 42,000-seat Amadou Ahidjo Stadium. The vuvuzela is a long horn blown by fans to support their teams at matches. Among the fans is Sylvie Dinui, a 21-year-old university student. Dinui says COVID-19 restrictions imposed by organizers of the Africa Football Cup of Nations make it impossible for her and her peers to get into the stadium to support African football.
I have been blocked because I have not done my COVID-19 test and I have not been vaccinated. I would have loved to watch the Morocco-Comoros match at the Amadou Ahidjo Stadium. Morocco is my favorite team.
Dinui and football fans outside the stadium say but for COVID-19, thousands of people would have been present in stadiums to support African men's soccer as they did when Cameroon hosted Women's AFCON in 2016. In 2016, the Confederation of African Football congratulated Cameroon for the massive turnout of fans when the Central African State hosted the Women's AFCON. This year, the Confederation said Only fans who show proof that they have received COVID-19 vaccines and proof of negative COVID-19 test results no more than 24 hours old will be allowed into stadiums. Cameroon says spectator turnout at stadiums since AFCON began on January 9 in Cameroon is very sparse. The government says a maximum of 3,000 fans and supporters turned out in the 20,000-seat stadiums in Limbe and Bafoussam. More than 10,000 supporters turned out at the 32,000-seat stadium in Garoua, a northern commercial town. Fewer than 15,000 watched matches at the 60,000-seat Japoma Stadium in Douala, Cameroon's commercial hub. Cameroonian football officials say strict COVID-19 measures make it impossible for fans to have access to the stadiums. Bafoussam hosts Pool B AFCON matches. Augustin Awa Fonka is governor of Cameroon's West Region, where Bafoussam is located. Awa said on Sunday he launched a campaign for people to get COVID-19 tests and vaccines so they could have access to the stadium.
During the first match, they did not know certain entry conditions. This time around, everybody is sensitized and everybody is mobilized and prepared to watch these great encounters. Tickets are already available at the various sales points. So the population are invited to go there and obtain their tickets.
Awa said as an incentive, the government is providing free transportation to stadiums for people who are vaccinated and show proof of negative COVID-19 test results. He said Cameroonian Prime Minister Joseph John Goute on Saturday asked workers and students who meet conditions to leave their offices and schools by 2 p.m. instead of 4 p.m. to attend matches. He says the permission given by Ngute for workers and students to leave their offices early ends on February 6, when AFCON is expected to end. Before the tournament began on January 9, Cameroon said thousands of fans were rushing to get their vaccines, but that vaccine hesitancy in the country is still quite high. The Public Health Ministry says 4,000 people all over Cameroon have received the vaccine since AFCON started, and that number is too low to bring out a massive fan turnout. The ministry says fewer than 5% of its targeted 16 million people have been vaccinated. Cameroon has about 26 million people. In addition, separatists have vowed to disrupt the games in Boya and Limbe, both English-speaking towns, hosting football fans, players and match officials for group matches for teams from Gambia, Mali, Mauritania and Tunisia. Last week, Cameroon reported that only about 3,000 supporters and fans turned out at the 20,000-seat Limbe Stadium during matches. Limbe is hosting football fans, players and match officials for group matches for teams from Gambia, Mali, Mauritania and Tunisia. The military said separatists increased attempts to infiltrate Limbe and disrupt the games. It says separatists frustrated over their inability to disrupt AFCON matches in Limbe have attacked civilians in neighboring towns, including Boya. However, the government says troops will protect all civilians threatened by separatists over attending matches. The government says civilians should turn out en masse for COVID-19 tests and vaccinations so they can watch matches, and that civilians in English-speaking towns should help the military by reporting intruders who want to see stadiums empty. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Centers for Disease Control and Prevention on Friday revised its guidance for Americans wearing masks to protect against COVID-19. CDC officials are recommending donning the most protective mask you can, while stopping short of advocating nationwide usage of N95 respirators. Emma Jelly of Reuters has more.
The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention have revised their guidance for Americans on wearing masks to protect against COVID-19, recommending wearing, quote, the most protective mask you can and that you will wear consistently. But the agency stopped short of advocating nationwide usage of N95 respirators, which filter at least 95% of airborne particles, both large and small. A surgical mask, by comparison, is designed to protect others against virus particles that are breathed out. The agency on Friday said it wants to encourage Americans to wear masks rather than push them to wear the highest grade face protection, but also explicitly said that respirators provide the best level of protection, while, quote, loosely woven cloth products provide the least protection. N95 masks are flying off the conveyor belt at Protective Health Gear in Paterson, New Jersey, as the manufacturer ramps up production amidst the Omicron surge of the coronavirus in the U.S. The company's CEO, Brian Wolin, says demand is through the roof.
I've been saying since day one, if they could make these available to everyone on the planet, I personally believe that every problem that we had wouldn't be here at this particular time. Now, certainly, these weren't available in abundance back in 2020, but they are now.
The factory is operating 24/7 to manufacture 70,000 N95 respirators per day and plans to increase that number to 110,000 in the coming weeks as demand heats up. Critics have accused the CDC of offering shifting and confusing guidance throughout the pandemic regarding mask wearing. After announcing Thursday that the federal government plans to make high-quality masks available to Americans for free, the White House on Friday said the government will also begin shipping 500 million COVID-19 tests to Americans later this month without charge. COVID-19 infections in the U.S. are at their peak, with nearly 780,000 new infections reported each day.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linar Moudou. The World Health Organization and the Africa Centers for Disease Control say there are no drugs approved to fight COVID-19. If you have tested positive, talk to a doctor before taking any medicines. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
That's all we prepared for you. This Monday, we now end this show with the song Oya Oya by Ali Kiba. We've been listening to Ali Kiba with the song Oya Oya. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Jikutinge moka Taina fute We kocha kocha Atarina mufe Afungaga moko Kama kupenda ni mithamili ya kwako